At this point, it was like late 90s. And I had gotten my CCNA because one of the guys I worked with had gotten his, and he was so snotty about it that I said, give me your books. I will do this. And so I did.
That's Denise Donahue, business architect, technical author, and Cisco certified CCIE holder since the early 2000s. In this episode, we're going to continue our series for International Women's Month by bringing you this interview between Denise and Learning and Certifications Marketing Manager, Steph Garaffa. If you're not familiar with Denise's work, she's basically a Titan veteran of the technology field. She's written 12 books for Cisco Press over the last 20 years, including The Art of Network Architecture, Business-Driven Design, which is the first book that places business needs and capabilities at the center of the process of architecting and evolving networks. If you've prepared for a Cisco certification exam, there's a good chance that you've used some of Denise's work. And as a veteran with 30 years of experience, you can imagine that she's had to face situations of adversity due to her gender. So, Denise answers Steph's questions specifically about what it has been like for her to face gender bias throughout her career in the tech industry, and also provides tips to others who may face gender bias in their own careers.
Denise, we haven't really interacted much ever, so we're kind of meeting. And I guess before we really dive right in, though, it would be nice to have a little bit of context. So how long has your career in tech spanned? The reason I'm asking this is because you have such a unique perspective on how the industry has evolved and changed. I know it's been several decades. And in this specific topic, International Women's Day looks at things like gender bias, and without fail, it has changed so much over the years, and it continues to change. So let's take a step back and look at where your career began, and then we can dive into some of the questions that I have.
So, yeah, I started my career as an economist. It's also a male-dominated field. First touched computers there as a user. Actually, that was in the 1970s. That's how long I've been doing this. And then just kind of over time discovered that I really liked that part of it better than the running regressions and stuff. And that part of it, the computers back then were like connecting into NIH's mainframe with a dumb thermal terminal and data lines into your house when you had to work from home. So yeah, it's changed a lot since then. Technology has just gone crazy. It's just been wonderful to sit back and watch it.
So I was looking back, I saw that you were a school teacher for a period. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Let me fill in that gap a little bit.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it's even more fun than that. It was a nursery school teacher. So I was an economist for a while. And then when my second child was born, I decided I wanted to not work full time. And so instead I stayed home and then started a couple of IT related companies. One took computers into nursery schools and daycare centers and taught computers to the kids. And then I sold that because that was getting too big because I had wanted to do something just, you know, from home, kind of, and was so burnt out that I was a nursery school teacher for a couple of years at my kids' school, which was the most fun job ever, and actually gave me a lot of skills that I've used since then.
That's interesting. So you started in tech, then went to nursery school as a teacher, and then what happened next after that?
Well, I was making like $5,000 a year as a nursery school teacher. So that, you know, you can only do that for a couple of years. So then I decided, okay, yeah, I want to go back to tech full time. Went and got some classes, got my MCSE for Microsoft cert, and got the first Novell cert. And then with a couple of other people, started another IT company where we were taking care of servers and computers for like small to medium sized businesses. That's where I really got introduced to networking. This was in the mid-1990s. So we had to, of course, make LANs, network the computers for the companies, and then connect them to the internet, the budding internet at that point. And I finally had a customer who wanted a Cisco solution because everybody else was using these like Bay Networks and Adtran modems and stuff. And I was just like so blown away with what Cisco could do. You know, the light bulb clicked. It was like a switch turned on. I was just like, I want to do this. I want to know more about this. So I sold my part of the company to my partners and went into Cisco networking. It wasn't as hard of a transition then as it probably was now, because it was still a very budding industry. I mean, this was like, at this point, it was like late 90s. And I had gotten my CCNA because one of the guys I worked with had gotten his, and he was so snotty about it that I said, give me your books. I will do this. And so I did.
How would you say he was snotty? Do you think it was just the certification, or maybe it was gender related?
Oh yeah, both.
Yeah.
It was a really big thing then. It was a big deal to get your CCNA then. You know, it was different in the year 2000. And so, yeah, there was a lot of ego there. There was a lot of, yeah, I did this, look at me. And I will admit, on my side, there was also some ego and also some kind of, if a guy can do it, I can do it, feeling to it.
I don't think you're the first person to ever have that thought.
Yeah. So I did, which then set me up to be able to get a job with Chesapeake Computer Consultants in Maryland. They did instructor consultants, so you could call it an insultant or a constructor, whichever you wanted to. So I got a job with them, and that's where then I got my Cisco instructor certification through them. But then they started going under, and so I called up someone at Global Knowledge and said, hey, I think I'm going to get fired on Monday. Do you guys have any job openings? And they're like, yeah, if you get fired, call us back. So I did get fired, and I did call them back, and they hired me. So then I taught Cisco classes for Global Knowledge for 4 years.
You know, something that's interesting that we've heard is that there tends to be more women who take classes, whether it's at Global Knowledge or Cisco Networking Academy. The prevalence of women is lower. Do you think that that is just that we're not catering to women, we're not explaining their potential, or that they have an opportunity in this career field, or maybe it's upbringing? So why do you think that is? Why do you think that there's a lower prevalence of women who tend to take networking classes? And in your experience, did you see that same trend?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I rarely had a woman in my classes. Now, keep in mind, this was 2000 to 2004 when I did this. But I know it's the same thing now. And I really don't know. It frustrates me because in my mind, this is such an awesome industry. It's so fascinating. You can be so creative in it. I don't know why more people don't want to do it, to be honest. But I guess it's because you look around and it's all guys. You associate technology with males, with men. And also there are times when you're in the industry and you run into bias. I mean, you run into people who assume that you can't learn this, or you don't want to learn this, or, you know, you're not suited for this type of job. Even today, there's been some Twitter wars, X wars on that.
Yeah, I've seen that myself. I manage the social media channels for learning and certifications, so I see it all.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Then, yeah.
And that actually brings me to one of my questions. I was wondering, can you think back to a specific time when you felt like your gender influenced your career or professional interactions more than it should, as opposed to performance factors like your skills and knowledge?
Oh, yeah. Maybe not my career as a whole, because I'm one of those people who just, I do what I do, you know? And if it's not fitting here, then I'm going to find a place that it fits. But just in interactions, it's better now, but you still deal with things like guys assuming you want to take the notes at the meeting or plan the parties or customer lunches. I've had male customers who wouldn't shake my hand or have a one-on-one meeting with me because I'm a woman, and that's not their culture. We don't do that. There was one time I'd applied for a promotion to a manager and I didn't get it. And I asked why, and they said, well, this other person who was up for it, he's never managed before. He's not really qualified for it, but we don't know where else to put him, and he's got a family.
Wow.
Yeah. And that wasn't that long ago.
So instead of calling out your gender or your personal situation, they targeted towards the other person being more in need of that position.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because he was a guy and he had a family. And of course, since I'm a woman and my husband's working, then obviously I don't need the job. I don't need the promotion.
Wow.
It didn't matter that his wife also worked.
So what happened next? Did you...
I left.
You left.
Yes, I left.
And do you feel good about that decision?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that happens so many more times than we want to admit. We hear about women who are just passed over for promotions or they're moved into roles that are non-technical, more managerial. And it's just the typical way of the world, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's unconscious bias. You'd think this is the box that women belong in. And so let me put you in this box.
So looking back over the years, though, because you said that this situation happened fairly recently, have you seen a trend towards there being more of a leveled playing field across genders?
I think it's better now, except for a few repressive cultures out there. I think globally, generally, it's better. And for the IT in particular, I think IT is more diverse now. And I think that the DevNet and the coding initiatives have helped with that because it's like a lower bar to entry for women for some reason. There's a lot more women in there. With IT becoming more diverse, when you see people of other genders or races or cultures doing a job and doing it well, then that's got to shift something in your mind. No matter, even the most biased mind, that's got to make a little shift in there.
Absolutely. The preconceived notion isn't there when you're looking at new technologies. There's no idea of who should be the person managing that job or doing that role. If we consider the impact of cloud networking and the rise of AI, if you're giving your advice to up-and-comers, up-and-coming network engineers, specifically for women, should they be looking at those particular evolving technology spaces, or would you recommend they go more of a traditional route? Or does it not even matter?
I think it's the same answer for men and women for this. If you're going to stay relevant, you've got to be aware of what's happening in the world, especially right now, and especially in this field. Because what we're doing right now in technology is going to change the world for the coming decades. It's pretty well accepted. We all know we're in a technological revolution. It started, you know, several decades ago. And I think of it as like the Industrial Revolution and how that changed businesses and how that processes and business priorities. And I think it's the same thing. This technological revolution is going to have the same effect on businesses, governments, our lives, everybody's lives. For instance, look at all this recent layoffs in the tech industry. Those aren't because the companies were broke. They've got enough money to buy each other, for goodness sake. Those are because they don't have people with the right skills. And so they're laying off some section and then adding jobs in other sections. Because having the right workforce is what's becoming really more important than having capital. They've got capital. They've got lots of money. They just don't have the right workforce with the right skills. And we've already seen, you talked about cloud, we've already seen how the effect of cloud and SaaS apps has changed the skills that we have to have. My focus is network design. I don't care at all about installing or configuring cloud stuff, but I have had to learn enough about them to be able to work them into a design. It's changed my skills. And when you think about the changes that like AI is bringing, and how much that's going to change our business processes and what we do, how we do things. It can make us super efficient even, or it could completely get rid of our job. And then you've got quantum computing coming along. We think about IT, but these technologies are disrupting across all industries. And so I think our economic system's also going to have to change because capitalism isn't the right fit. Communism's not the right fit. Instead, you've got to focus on the people, on the staff. What skills does your staff have? What knowledge do they have? How does that fit with what you need them to be able to do? So that's a long way to say, sorry, but that's a long way to say that if you want to stay relevant, and we all do, then we have to be aware of the big picture and decide where we want to fit in it. For another example, I know I'll never be an AI coder. But I am a user, and so I pay attention to things like the AI-based network tools that people like John Capobianco is working on. So for everybody, men, women, anybody in this field, I think you've got to keep your head up. You've got to stay aware of what's happening globally. Look for opportunities that fit your interest, and then be willing to change if you have to upskill, to learn new things, to make a jump into a completely different area, because jobs are going to be lost because of these technologies. Jobs have already been lost because of cloud technologies, but now other jobs have been created. So you want to be the one that's right there with the skills they need as those jobs are created. That's a very long answer and a very passionate answer, but it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately.
No, I'm with you completely. Having the right skills in the right roles, that means that the people who want to stay relevant, you have to keep track of the skills you need. If you're thinking back to gender bias, if the skills are in demand, it doesn't matter what the person looks like who has them. Being qualified is being qualified.
Absolutely. So I think that's going to really help with the whole gender bias thing.
Denise, how about for those listening, what tips can you share with others who may face gender bias in their career?
First, two things, basically. First, try to head off some of the bias. And acting confident is one way that's worked for me. And I'm putting emphasis on acting confident. Because remember, nobody is confident, not even the people who seem confident. But if you act it, people are more likely to listen to you and trust you, trust your abilities. I don't mean like swagger confidence, but like the quiet kind that says, I know I have something here to contribute. That's one. Second, what's worked for me is to call it out when it happens, whether it's to you or someone else. How you do that depends on the circumstance. Like in a meeting, sometimes I'll laugh and say something like, wow, you all ignored my suggestion and then listened when the guy said it. I didn't think that actually happened in real life. Or, pardon me, I actually wasn't finished yet. I'm going to take a minute and complete my thought, okay? And then you can go. Or also like with a coworker or a boss would work too, to say something like, hey, do you realize what you did or what you're doing? And then tell them. And chances are they didn't realize that they were talking over you or assuming something about you that is kind of biased. So those would be like two main tips I have. But people always ask too about like pay inequities and promotions. And those I think are trickier because those can be so subjective. Rarely do you work at a place where a promotion is strictly based on, you know, a checklist of things or your pay. Everybody has exactly the same pay for exactly the same job. So you have to take that step and do the hard work and put yourself out there, which is really hard to do. It's hard to advocate for yourself. But if you don't, who is going to? Who will? So if you are faced with that situation or a situation where you have to report something to HR, plan what you'll say ahead of time. Write it out even and memorize it so that you can be factual and non-emotional when you talk to your manager or HR or whoever. Have it all planned out and ready. Those are my tips.
Denise also takes a moment to share that she has hope for gender bias to improve within the workplace in the future.
I tend to be a hopeful person in general and assume the best things about people in general until proven otherwise. And so, yeah, yes, I have seen some really hopeful signs as far as how things are improving over time. Number one, that like we talked about, the number of women that are, and not just women, but the people of color, people from other cultures that you see in IT now. That really, really gives me hope that IT is becoming a field that's open and welcoming to everybody. I see a reduction also in the amount of gender bias that's tolerated in the workspace.
What message would you give organizations when they're hiring? What best practices? What would be your message to organizations who are hiring in tech? If you could create in a perfect world, what would a complete lack of gender bias look like? What should organizations strive for to stay competitive and to fight gender bias going forward?
I think it's critical that organizations figure out a way to do this, because the only way they're going to be able to succeed in this changing economy is to be able to tap into all the resources that are out there. If you arbitrarily cut off half of the population, then you're really hurting yourself. So I think in hiring, well, obviously you've got to choose the best person for the role, but we tend to hire people that are like ourselves. That's just the way humans are set up. So it's really important that you consciously are aware of that and consciously try to make sure that that's not coming into the hiring decision, that you really are hiring the best person for the role. It's also really important that a diverse set of people are applying for that job, because so many times when I've interviewed people who want to work for the companies that I'm working for, and so I'm doing the interviews, there are no women who even applied. And so you've got to make sure, or try to make sure, that the word's reaching out to a wide range of people. Yeah, we're talking gender now, but because it's, you know, Women's Month, but also this applies to other races and cultures too. The other part of this is that once they're there, you have to have policies that are enforced that make sure that people don't deal with gender bias, that make sure that people know that it's expected, that they'll behave as if everybody is equal, and that if there's any issues, those will be dealt with.
It does. A lot of really great nuggets in there. I read recently a best practice for organizations in the hiring phase to avoid bias is to create a checklist of sorts so they can decide before interviews, before they meet the person, the candidate, they go through this checklist and they say, this is what's important. How well does each candidate fit into each of these parameters? And I really liked that because they said that after interviews, a lot of the time they will think to themselves that something matters more because that candidate had that in a higher quantity than the other candidate. That's one way that bias can show up. But then as you were talking, I was thinking about how women are less likely to apply for positions because if they don't meet every single item or bullet point of the criteria.
So true.
Can you expand on that? Maybe offer some advice to women who are looking at positions and they say, well, I have 3 years, I don't have 5 years of experience. I'm not qualified.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You always hear that. And I've seen that too. I have a daughter and I've seen that with her and with other women that I've mentored. And my advice is always like, look, all they can do is not advance your application. All they can do is say no. And if you do get to an interview and then you don't get the job because you missed that one, you know, like you said, that one nugget, that one thing that's critical, well, then you've got the interview experience at least. So go for it.
Yeah, what do you have to lose?
Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
Exactly. It might work out that you do have enough, that nobody else has anything better, you know? The other side of that, though, is the way that the automated way that resumes are handled. You know, how many times do you suppose resumes get kicked out because women are maybe a little more modest in them than a guy? Don't put in all the buzzwords, or don't set it up so that it gets through the automated process, the automated screening, before it even gets to a human.
Denise wraps this interview up with one final word of advice about taking risks in your career.
But I think in life, you've got to be willing to take risks. I have a poster that has gone with me for probably the last 30 years. It's laminated now, so it was falling apart. It has inspired me so much in my whole, like, gosh, do I take this step and try and write this book that I want to write? You know, do I take this step and apply for this job, etc.? And it's a guy, it's from the back, a guy in full ski gear, on his skis, standing with his skis at the top of an old rickety white wooden roller coaster. And his skis are in the track of the roller coaster. And at the bottom of it, it says, there's only one way to find out. I have felt so many times like I'm that person about ready to kill myself on that roller coaster.
That's it for our interview with Denise. If you'd like to hear more of this series from others about their experiences in the tech industry and about updates to the evolving world of Cisco certifications, please subscribe to the Cisco Learning Network podcast and be sure to visit the Cisco Learning Network at learningnetwork.cisco.com to find all kinds of resources like exam topics, training videos, and an entire community of others who can help you on your learning journey. Thanks for listening.